Very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 5th of September 2021. It's a Sunday class. We will be continuing from this book. Second lesson on the 6th Paitreya Platform Sutra transcript book. We are at page 20. So this particular sutra, the 6th Paitreya Platform Sutra, is a very good sutra. What I'm trying to explain to you is that you don't need to be educated to understand the real Dhamma. Even an illiterate person like Hui Ning can understand. So don't look down upon yourself. Don't blame yourself for the lack of education. No need. You only need to have an open mind, a simple mind, a mind that has faith, and be very sincere in understanding life. Then you just persevere to develop the understanding. Then the way will be there. The Dhamma will be there. Then you will be able to go beyond. Just like Hui Ning. Of course, he has his past cultivation. We shall read on. Yeah. So this part is very important to develop the understanding, because I sometimes come across new people and sometimes also certain kayamitas, because they had this inferiority complex. They thought they don't have much education. So some of these people may not have gone to the university and all those things. So they thought they are not up to the mark or not as good as those who have tertiary education. But the truth is, you don't need to have any formal education to learn Dhamma. You look at Hui Ning, the 6th Paitreya, he's an illiterate, and yet he turned out to be one of the best Mahayana Dhamma master they have ever seen. The point that Hui Ning want to emphasize is that later on, after he inherited the 6th Paitreya patriarchate from the 5th Paitreya Hongren, he met one nun. I think this nun was like heard about Hui Ning and wanted to meet Hui Ning, but she was not impressed. You know, the first time he met Hui Ning, he thought Hui Ning must be somebody very smart, very wise, very educated. Then she wants to develop understanding of the Da Nipan Jing, I think Maha Nirvana Sutta. So Hui Ning said, whatever you don't understand, you can ask, then I can explain to you. Then he took the sutra and passed to Hui Ning. Then Hui Ning politely tell her, I can't read. He said, I'm an illiterate. You have to read it for me, so that when I hear it, I can explain to you. She straight away become like no more confident in Hui Ning. He said, how can you explain the Dhamma when you don't even understand the words? Then Hui Ning, of course, patiently smiled and told her, when it comes to Dhamma, it's not the words, it's not the 文字, it's about comprehending the teaching. But the teaching is not the word, it's not the 文字, but to share, to communicate, and to explain. Living beings need words, language, dialect, 文字, to exist. It's like something pointing towards something. When you point towards a tree, you say, this is a tree. The word tree, T-R-E-E, is not that thing. That thing has no label, has no words. that thing is just that thing. But we name it differently. The English language call it a tree. The Malay language, Bahasa Malaysia, call it a pokok. And Mandarin people who speaks Mandarin, su, all use different words, but pointing towards the same entity. So wenzi can be confusing. Words can be confusing. So when you pronounce it under different dialect, different language, different aspect of pronunciation, then it can be very confusing. That's why the one that points towards that thing is not the truth. The truth is that reality that everybody observes through the pure perception. And that is the reality. But to describe that, you can go about doing many things. So Dhamma has that particular type of unique characteristics. When it comes to Dhamma, it's not so much of the words. You must understand words are needed because we need to express it, communicate, and point towards the truth. Otherwise, nobody can understand. But when it comes to the real comprehension of the truth, it is beyond words, beyond thought, beyond mind. So that aspect is very important. Okay, we read on. Tipitaka Master Hua's introduction continue. The sixth Patriarch Sutra was spoken by the great master Huining. The great master was originally an illiterate peasant. No, a peasant is supposed to be a farmer, but he is actually a woodcutter. So he actually helped the family to gain a livelihood through chopping woods from the forest and sell it to the merchant in the city. And when he heard the sentence of the Vajra Sutra, Vajra means diamond sutra, which says one should produce that thought which is nowhere supported. The moment he heard that, and when he heard the sentence of the Vajra Diamond Sutra, which said, one should produce that thought which is nowhere supported. I have to read the note first. The English translation here is, thought which is nowhere supported is not so precise. The actual translation should be, the mind that has no dwelling. Yeah. Because support sometimes, the meaning is not so clear. It is better to translate it as the mind that has no dwelling, means it doesn't dwell anywhere. So English language sometimes may not be so precise when you say support. When the word support means you need something to support it. So it can at times be confusing. But if you say don't dwell, then it's easy to understand. It means you don't stay somewhere. You don't allow your mind to dwell somewhere. Wherever you dwell, you create perception. You create what we call thought process. So that's where that problem or misunderstanding can arise. So this one is just for info. Huining experienced an awakening and went to Huang Mei. Actually, Huang Mei is the place, Huang Mei San, to draw near to the fifth patriarch, the great master Hong Ren. The fifth patriarch transmitted to him the wonderful Dhamma, using the mind-to-mind seal. So this mind-to-mind seal is very important. I think here the typing is wrong. Using the mind to seal the mind. Why they use such English word? It should be mind to mind seal. not using the mind to seal the mind. It's actually transmitted from mind to mind, from nature to nature, which has been handed down in unbroken patriarchal succession. The six patriarchs inherited this mind seal, Dhammadong, and proceeded to carry out the wisdom life of the Buddha. In his speaking of the six patriarch sutra, so that's how the history behind. This is how the platform sutra comes about. Nowadays, this six patriarch platform sutra has been translated into English, and the mind seal Dhammadong of the Buddha has therefore been transmitted in perpetual to the West. It is hoped that Westerners will now read, recite, and study it, and all become Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and all patriarchs. This is the main objective of this translation, means Xuanhua's translation. May all who see and hear it quickly accomplish the Buddha's way. So that was their pure wish. See, this is a pure wish Master Xuanhua has made for you all. Wherever this sutra is transmitted, the orthodox Dhamma may be found right in that place, causing living beings quickly to accomplish Buddhahood. Such is the importance of this new translation. The sutra is indeed a treasure trove. It is the true body of the Buddha, the compassionate father and mother of all living beings. It can give rise to limitless Buddha, Bodhisattvas, and patriarchs. May all in the West who now read this sutra realize Bodhi and accomplish the Buddha way. So this is a very good aspiration. The sutra contains the precious wisdom of the Buddha. There are some, let us call them garbage eating scholars. I think this one must have translated from the Mandarin, who claim that the Surangama Sutra was not spoken by the Buddha. This is most certainly not the case. And I have made the following vow. If the Surangama Sutta is false, I will fall into uninterrupted hell forever. So this is the affirmation that Master Xuanhong has made. So this was written in 1977, August, San Francisco. Chang Bai San Singh. Okay. So he took out this challenge seriously. You will have to understand the Surangama Sutta because it is actually very genuine. But very few can understand the Surangama Sutta. This was written, I think, by his disciple. Let's move on to the next page. Translator's introduction, 3.2.2. The translator is a co-chairman of the Buddhist Text Translation Society, Primary Translation Committee, International Institute for the Translation of Buddhist Texts, San Francisco's Bikuni Hengyun. The translation was done in August 1977. That time I was still in second year University of Malaya. That's why I was very fortunate when the delegation came over from this city of 10,000 Buddhas. I met them when I was in the university. This is the third edition of the first commentary to the Six Patriarchs Dhamma Jewel Platform Sutra, ever to express the essence of the Six Patriarchs' heart. Since the time the great master spoke this sutra, no other commentaries has revealed his basic principle, the Dhamma of his heart. Tipitaka Master Xuanhua's commentary unfolds the Dhamma, the heart Dhamma, the mind seal, before the reader. Dhamma Jewel is called Fa Bao. So Bao is like very precious in English. Fa is Dhamma, precious Dhamma. That's why the sutra is called Liu Chu Fa Bao Tan Qing. Oh, okay. They add in the word Fa Bao. Normally we heard about Liu Chu Tan Qing, but they add in the word Fa Bao. Fa Bao is to enhance the meaning. So this Dhamma jewel, or precious Dhamma, Bao is like very precious, or you could translate as precious stone, jewels. If you wish to understand the wonderful meaning of this sutra, you should study this commentary. For within it are set for the limitless, inexhaustible, profound principle of the Buddha Dhamma. Among Western and Eastern people, it is the flower of wisdom, the real fruit of Bodhi. Furthermore, this translation has been prepared by the Buddhist Text Translation Society of the Sino-American Buddhist Association. Each of its members, bhikkhus, bhikkhunis, upasaka, upasika, many of whom hold masters and doctorate degrees, have read the manuscript with care over a period of several years to ensure its accuracy. So from this description, we know how meticulous the translation society and committee really determined to make sure the accuracy of the translation is there. Essentially, the mind seal cannot be spoken or expressed in writing. See, they also know. But in his commentary, the master has done just that, using numerous analogy and expedient devices to cause people to understand what they have never understood before. Tipitaka Master Hua was born in northern China. And after his mother's death, he practiced filial piety by sitting beside her grave for a period of 3 years. This part is very touching. He read his biography. He built a small grass hut to keep out the wind and rain and sat there in meditation. If food was brought to him, means if there are people who offer, then he ate. If no food was brought, he did not, means he did not have his meal. The master later traveled south to Canton, where he was appointed by the Venerable Xuyin. Xuyin is the patriarch before Xuan Huang, the famous 120 years old Xuyin Lao He Sang, the Venerable Grandmaster Xuyin, to serve as head of Vinaya Academy at Nanhua Monastery, the temple of the six patriarchs. He later received in transmission the Dhamma of Master Xuyin and became his Dhamma successor. That's why Master Xuan Huang became, if I'm not wrong, the 45th. Patriarch after Xuyin was 44. But this one is the lineage of China, excluding the earlier 27 that is from India, where Bodhidharma is 28, I think, from India. Patriarch. Then when Bodhidharma came over to China, he is the first patriarch. Then all the way down to Master Xuan Huang, if I'm not mistaken, is 45th. Since arriving in America, the master has turned the great Dhamma wheel, lecturing the Surangama Sutta, the Lotus Sutta, the Earth Star Bodhisattva Sutta, the Vajra or Diamond Sutta, and the Heart Sutras and others. He teaches an ever-growing number of American disciples, Many of whom have left home to become bhikkhunis and bhikkhus. In San Francisco, the master has founded the Gold Mountain Monastery and lectured on the Avatamsaka Sutra there. He also established the International Institute for the Translation of Buddhist Texts. He has made the solemn vow that wherever he goes, the orthodox Dhamma will prevail, and the Dhamma ending age shall not set in. So most recently, the master established the city of 10,000 Buddha near Tamach. So this one is a very famous city of 10,000 Buddha. In Mandarin, it's called One Fortin in California. A vast complex of 237 acres and 60 buildings to serve as a center for world Buddhism. The city of 10,000 Buddha also housed the Dharmarayana Buddhist University, of which the master is president, and soon to be established a many program to benefit living beings in many ways. The master upholds firmly the orthodox Dhamma. For the Dhamma he teaches proceed from direct and authoritative transmission, and he works unceasingly for the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. This lively commentary constitutes the first authentic transmission to the West of the mind seal of all Buddha, which has passed in unbroken patriarchal succession from Sakyamuni Buddha to the present day. We present this volume as the foundation for the flourishing of the Buddha Dhamma in the West. So this is written by the Bhikkhuni Hingyun Buddhist Text Translation Society, Co-Chairman, Primary Translation Committee, International Institute for Translation of Buddhist Text, San Francisco, August 1977. Note, the city of 10,000 Buddha is pronounced as One Fortin in Mandarin. So this one is for people who are Mandarin educated to have a better understanding. This was the foreword by the Primary Translation Society, followed by the reviewer's preface. It is good to go through all this so that you understand the purpose of this sutra, why they translate it in such a manner. The reviewer's preface also has a role. We shall read on. Reviewer's preface. When the fifth patriarch transmitted the Dhamma to the sixth patriarch, he said to him, "Do not speak too soon, for the Buddha Dhamma arises from difficulty." So this advice was very important. So this is the meaning. Sorry, this is the message from the fifth patriarch. Centuries later in northern China, Tipitaka master Chen Huang, then known as Velasampai, was practicing Velapiety. He cultivated and meditated for 3 years beside his mother's grave. His only protection from the northern wind and rain was a 5 foot square heart made from a stalk of sohat bound together in an A-frame, which left both ends exposed to the elements. One day while cultivating, a miracle happened. Velasampai saw the great master, the sixth patriarch, come to his house. He entered through one of the openings and talked to the Velasampai, his master Shen Hua, just like an ordinary person. Velasampai thought that he was real, forgetting that at that time the great master Hui Ning had entered Nibbana. Nirvana, or went to Parinibbana over 1,000 years ago. The six patriarchs said to Vilasambhai. So this message came, right? And this is very interesting. In the future, you can go to America. That was the message from six patriarchs. You will meet this person and that person. Five schools were divided into 10 to teach and transmit living beings. 10 will become 100. 100 will become 1,000, and so forth to endless, endless numbers in abundance, 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 endless abundance, numbers incalculable as grains of sand in the river Ganges. This marked the true beginning of the proper Dhamma in the West. That's why how Dhamma went over to the West. This is Master Xuanhua's transmission because of the message from Master Huining. So this was an encounter with the six patriarchs Huining. That's why when two cultivators relate their encounters with great beings, sometimes you need to have an open mind. Yes, you may not understand how these things are possible. You may think the six patriarch is already dead. How can he come back? Just like what Master Xuanhua mentioned. When in a dream, he couldn't recall that the six patriarch was already dead over 1,000 years ago. But what is your understanding on this? How come people can talk about it? Is it really true that the six patriarch came? What do you think actually happened? What is your understanding? Give it a try. So Sister Padmasri, I think, give it a try. It is his nature that manifests, which is true. Then Brother Theo is myself replied, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Thank you, Sister Padmasri. Yes, it is their nature that manifests. Because every great being, they have their nature. Their nature never dies. So that nature of theirs can manifest. Like Kuan Yin has his nature, Sakyamuni, Buddha has his nature. All the great Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, they have their nature. All the great beings, the cultivator of the way, they have their nature. Like when I say Kuan Yin came in 1986, to me it is not Kuan Yin. But her nature manifests because of her vows and affinity. When the condition arises, it will manifest. Just like what I had shared with you all, with some of you, regarding my earlier encounters with some of these great beings. In 2008, Maitreya Buddha's nature came with a request to share the true Dhamma. 请你把正法传下去. Then in 1986, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva's nature came with the Triple Gem and her message to move fast, not much time left. All these are not the real person. It is from their nature. They have their nature which is ever radiating for the cultivator of the way. When it is time for certain cultivator to arise and manifest, and when their form and mind are established, their nature will know. And their nature will come, especially Kuan Yin Bodhisattva. They will protect, support, guide, and bless their form and mind that are connected to that nature. When the time comes, they will come and send message to your form and mind so that you will know what to do. You will also come to know that all these are meant to be because there are affinities and conditions behind all those happenings. That's the reason why all these are possible. And you have to have an open mind. Don't use your limited mundane mind to simply comment and come up with all the funny ideas that you may have. Do you understand? So this is to prevent those people who are not tactful for creating unnecessary karmic offense. Yeah, this one, karmic offense through heedless speech is very dangerous. Because before you have the understanding, you cannot prejudge or simply say things. There are a lot of things still beyond the cultivator of the way who has not awakened or gone all the way to understand the cultivation of Mahayana Bodhisattva ways. It's just like a lot of practitioners from the Theravada tradition, which I have encountered before. Even recently, I also encountered one that asked me some questions. Maybe I share this, then you all may understand. This is okay. I share it in my Kayanimittas. So this one, I think, is very good. There is a, I think this one is somebody who read my short video, who must have heard my short video. Then after hearing my short video, he asked me a question. He says, "Sir, are you a Mahayana Buddhist?" Then I was feeling strange why he asked. But nevertheless, I explained. So I read to you the actual conversation, which we actually conversed through the website. So he said, "Hello, I have a question. Are you a Mahayana Buddhist?" Then I replied, "I started with Theravada tradition. Then the Mahayana teaching surfaced, and I can understand the Mahayana sutta and teaching very naturally." Then the next question indicates why he asked that way. He said, he texted me, alias Teo Kenkun. He asked, "How accurate is Mahayana? Because wasn't it added on later? If so, why not follow the original teaching?" This is always the argument of most Theravada tradition, because they feel that it's more safe and more authentic. Then in bracket, he said, not trying to be rude or condescending, which is very good, but he said, "I'm just curious. I'm trying to understand all the different types or kind of Buddhism." And I replied to him, I said, "Zen Bilin." I don't know why he used the abbreviation Zen, but Bilin, like a billionaire. I said, "Have an open mind to find out. Do not prejudge before you have developed the understanding and the cultivation. After you have developed the understanding, you will be very surprised at how accurate and beautiful the Mahayana Sutras are. The interpretation or commentaries of this teaching may differ, but the basic teachings of both Mahayana and Theravada are the same. Because if you truly understand the Theravada teachings of Sakyamuni Buddha, then you will naturally also understand Mahayana teaching. There is no difference at all. Hope this helps." So at least after hearing my explanation, he was full of joy. He replied, he said, "Amazing, amazing answer. Thank you so much for expounding this. I will be open-minded and study the sutra after I complete the Nikayas. Thank you so much." So this is a typical Theravada tradition cultivator or practitioner who reads the Nikaya and cultivate accordingly. And they have this, I don't know what you call it, preconceived conditioning or idea that Mahayana is not that authentic. Because during the early days when I was cultivating the Dhamma, I actually overheard some of this. And a lot of the Theravada practitioners, they are quite skeptical of Mahayana teaching because they cannot understand. And to them, a lot of the Mahayana Sutra are very abstract, like Heart Sutra, form is emptiness, emptiness is form, and a lot of all those other things. Then you have the Six Patria Sutra, Surangama Sutra. These are all very alien to traditional Theravada tradition type of Buddhist practitioner. So because of that, we tend to have this misunderstanding or misconception of each other's teaching, then the thought is different. Then it ends up, I think, more often than not in the past. But nowadays it's less. I don't see all this anymore. But I know it's still in the mindset of a lot of Theravada practitioners. That's why, since there is condition, I want to let people understand that the two teachings, they are actually similar, the same. If you can understand the truth, I have to qualify the word, the truth, Theravada tradition teaching of Sakyamuni Buddha. If you truly understand, then you will understand Mahayana teaching, no different at all. The basic Dhamma is the same. The basic principle can be understood through the Theravada teachings. You don't have to have super or what we call esoteric teaching or understanding to comprehend Mahayana. No need. Everything can be understood. That's what I went through. I started off with Theravada tradition. I was not exposed to Mahayana until, I think, 1986. Then when I first received the first translation of the Surangama Sutra, which was from City of 10,000 Buddha, Master Shenhua, I received it from his Kapiya, the English translation, the first book. That book was so unique. When I read through it, it touches my nature. Then I realized, what is this book? How come I can understand the teaching? I can actually understand them. Then later on, condition arise. I make the offering and vow and determine to make up for the first two encounter where I still studying. I don't have the means to make offering and donation and all this thing. So after all this was made, suddenly my brother, who was an electrical engineer, he was sent to America near City of 10,000 Buddha, California, for his training. I think it's the company sent him. Then he told me he's going there for, I think, a month or so, I forgot already. Oh, I said, that's good. Then I gave him an instruction. You go there, whatever English translation you can find, buy them all and ship it back to me. I will pay for it. That's how I received all the English translation after that. So, very strange. Then, after that, when I met up with Master Shenhua, a lot of things happened. In 1986, my whole family took refuge under him. That's why all these things can happen, actually. It is not something very like out of the ordinary or what. Whatever that is meant to be will be, affinity, condition, everything. When you cultivate, you will understand. That's why I always advise, have an open mind. Before you have the understanding, don't prejudge, don't comment, just let things be. Then, like, my understanding is very important. Before I came out to share, I also have this understanding in order to avoid unnecessary misunderstanding or unnecessary argument over the teaching or conflict, misunderstanding. I said, I will introduce three sets of conditions before I agree to come out to share. So that three conditions actually avoided a lot of unnecessary misunderstanding or misconception. The first condition is, call it a Dhamma sharing, because I don't want it to be an authority or a one-way traffic where you are the authority, the teacher teaching. to avoid that, I call it Dhamma sharing. So they agreed. Then the second one is, we are here to share the Dhamma. I respect your cultivation. In return, you respect my cultivation. So we are not here to argue about right and wrong. We are here to exchange understanding, share our understanding. Then the third condition is, make use of whatever that is suitable for us to continue with our cultivation and progress on the path of Dhamma. Have open mind. So based on these three conditions, which they agreed, I agree to come out to share. And it has been coming to 17 years, which was beautiful because of that. My nature understands what the thing is. So I established the sharing and teaching in such a manner that I call this the Kayamitas grouping. We are Dhamma friends to share the Dhamma. And to have Kayamita, I set up the Kayamita funds and all the whatever important understanding to evolve this cultivation and to develop this training and teaching. That's why in the Bhotio Kayamita website, our website, bhotio.com, my Kayamita website, you go in, you can read about it. The objective of this website, how we establish the Kayamita grouping and how all this comes about. Then how all the activity and the sharing give rise to what we have today, the repository of great Dhamma material that came from the transcript of the Dhamma talk, the video, the short video, and also all the sharings that we have. Then we also have our other type of spiritual trip program, annual meditation retreat, and many other things that can help us to continue to have fellowship, our annual gathering of Kayamita, to enhance our faith, our understanding, and at the same time to establish the caudal relationship among Kayamitas through sincerity and all the very wholesome virtuous conduct that a cultivator would develop. So all this has paved the way for a lot of wholesomeness to arise. And till today, my nature rejoices with all the wholesomeness. That's why all this transcript sharing, I realize, is important, because I realize a lot of very beautiful Dhamma has been discussed, shared, then printed into transcript books. But how many really can understand and read through it? That's why I decided to go through one, each and every one of it. So at the end of the day, at least those who follow the teaching closely will appreciate what has been developed and transcribed. So all this has become very beautiful. Okay, we go back to the sharing. So remember, have an open mind. Don't use your limited mundane mind to simply comment or come out with all the funny ideology or preconceived misconception that you may have about other people's teaching, especially Mayana teachings. Okay, I will read on. So never look down upon anything or make fun of anything, because if you do, you have everything to lose. The question is very simple. What happens if they are the real ones? Their teachings are the authentic one. Then you not only miss the teaching, you will also get yourself into deep trouble because your wrong speech or your speech is not in accordance with Noble Eightfold Path. Why must you doubt? When you have an open mind, you don't need to doubt. The moment you doubt, that is delusion. What is doubt? It is one of the five mental hindrances of mind. You lack faith. You cannot understand. Yet you doubt. That is delusion because of your ego. Because you take side, wanting to be right. You want to show off via your logical argument. How can? It can't be because the sixth vritti is dead long ago. This is definitely an illusion. If you want to say that, better make sure you understand what you are saying. If you don't understand, the best policy is to keep quiet. Have an open mind. That's why silence is golden. Sadhu, for that good answer by Sister Padmasri. Then we shall continue. After they had talked, when the great master moved to leave, the failure son, Miss Master Shenhua, rose to escort him. They walked together a few steps, and suddenly the sixth patriarch was gone. It was then that failure Sampai realized, oh, the sixth patriarch has entered Parinibbana hundreds of years ago. But nevertheless, I met him today. So this is beautiful. Huh? Several decades after this miraculous following years of difficulties and hard cultivation, in a cold and tiny temple in San Francisco, Chinatown, Dipika Dhaka Master Shenhua began transmitting the Dhamma of the mind seal of all patriarchs. He continued to do so every day. Those who recognize him listen to it, consider it, and cultivate it. So this was a very touching phase. Actually, how he went over to China was also very interesting. You read his biography, it's written there. No, actually, he also had to overcome a lot of karmic tests, karmic obstruction, and all these things. But he managed to actually clear them all and finally arrive in the United States. In fact, while traveling across the ocean, he was attacked by non-humans because of some karmic entanglement too, that he was helping somebody. And that thing resulted in all this condition for all these things to happen. Anyway, if you are interested, you read it up yourself. You know, when I was in a university, I received the whole biography in psycho style sheet. I read it and it was amazingly interesting. Strangely, at that time, when I read, I can understand. I never have the funny idea of what people have gone through. Wow. Got such thing, like fairy tale. No, to me, my nature like can understand that this is something beautiful. This is something that can happen. You understand. So I'll read on. In this commentary on the Sixth Patriarch Sutra, the master said, "You will succeed only if you do not fear suffering." Oh, this one is a very good advice. In cultivation also same, you will succeed only if you do not fear suffering. The Buddha Dhamma arises from affliction or difficulties. The more difficulties, the better. So you must endure suffering. This is difficult, but you can do it, for it is the opening of your wisdom. So Bhikkhuni Hengqi, Buddhist Text Translation Society, co-chairman, Primary Translation Committee, International Institute of Nations, San Francisco, August 1979. So that was the year he wrote his preface. See, the word he used, endure suffering, is the same as the Dhamma taught in the Sabba Asavak Sutta. Certain asavak or defilement which you need to endure, you must endure. Some you need to exercise restraint. You have to exercise restraint. Okay, we continue. Turn to the next page. This one is all the patriarchships lineage. So the first two photo or picture, if you look at it, that's why that day I was, I think, sharing with my daughter, and I asked her to look. On the left-hand side, Namo original teacher Sakyamuni Buddha. So this is Sakyamuni. Then after that, the 28th patriarch, which is Bodhidharma, on the right. So the Bodhidharma, you look at the photo, you know it's Indian. But Sakyamuni is also from India. But how come it's so Chinese, the Mahayana picture? Because of the way the tradition and the culture actually created all this. So ignore what is shown here, because it is based on culture and tradition. Anyway, you know Sakyamuni has his hallmark. How the face look like is of course not important unless you have record from the past. Then maybe somebody can draw it out. Otherwise, if you go to different country, different tradition, they have different images of Sakyamuni Buddha. In India is different, in Sri Lanka is different, in Myanmar is different, in Thailand, Laos, it's all different. So all over the world, different country, because of their culture, they tend to draw all these images according to their culture. And after that, we have the other patriarchs. After Bodhidharma, the first patriarch, the next one is the second patriarch, Hui Ke, Da Si. Then you continue with the third patriarch, the fourth patriarch, fifth patriarch, and then only finally the sixth patriarch. So the sixth patriarch is Hui Neng, Hui Neng Da Si. That day somebody asked, how come from Sakyamuni Buddha straight away go to the 28th patriarch? I have explained it in my last talk or sharing, because he is the 28th and the last patriarch from India. After Sakyamuni passed away, it was passed down to Mahakasapa, who then passed it down to another 26th patriarch. Finally, it reached Bodhidharma. Bodhidharma carried the patriarchship over to China, just like how Master Xuanhua carried it over to the West, America. He is the first patriarch of the West in America. Then the next one he appoint will be the second patriarch in America. So hopefully when it reaches the sixth patriarch of the West, something great will also happen in the West. Hopefully, more profound teaching like those of Master Hui Neng can arise. If this one come out, he will be an English speaking as against Hui Neng, who is Mandarin speaking. So this one will have American accents. Okay, next page. We shall read the opening statement, which is very important. From now onwards, before we start, we shall recite verse of the opening of a sutra, the verse for opening a sutra. Let's recite together. So this one you all must learn to recite together so that we can appreciate how rare is it for us to receive this teaching. Verse for opening a sutra. The unsurpassed, profound and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter. in hundreds of millions of eons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. So this is the understanding that you must have. That's why they come out with this opening verse, to make sure you see, hear, and understand the importance of having the causes and conditions to receive this type of wonderful teachings. Yeah, this type of teaching is very difficult to encounter, even in hundreds of millions of aeons. Sometimes you may not even see it. Then since we have the causes and conditions, we are within the sasana, we must make affirmation. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow, that's why we must make vow, to fathom the Tathagata's true deep meaning. So this one is very important. So this one, you have to bear in mind that this type of teaching is very rare and not easy to come by. Just like the opening verse, Master Shen Hua mentioned the unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter, not only in one aeon, but hundreds and millions of aeons. And one aeon is one world cycle. Hence, if you have the condition to receive it, you should cherish it, recite it with faith and determination. Following the opening verse, I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's deep and true meaning. So this is a very important affirmation or adipan, determination. Okay, we stop here. Forward my Master Shenhua 3.2.4. We come back after it. So we are off the light. So you just relax body and mind. Maintain awareness for as long as you can. And trust your nature to do it. So I will set the alarm now. You are here to train your mind to be aware. That's it. Don't try to do anything else. That's why awareness-based meditation is to train your mind to develop this ability to be aware, to realize your true mind. Then your meditation will take off and you will progress very fast. So awareness is the most important. When you can develop the stability of awareness to realize your true mind, your silent mind, that is the first hallmark of healing, the hallmark of no thought, wu nian. When you are able to realize that true mind, which is tranquil, still, and without thought, that is the beginning of meditation. That is your true mind, your self nature. That is the one that can meditate. So just relax, body and mind. Be at ease. Don't try to know. Don't try to do anything. Just maintain awareness. Aware, sis. Aware, sis. Or aware, finish. Aware, finish. Just let it settle down. And patiently wait for the shift of consciousness to arise. Or patiently wait for the sankhara activity to slow down and to finally dissipate. When your mind is without the sankhara activity, without thought, that is your true mind. That is your most beautiful nature, the silent name, silent mind within. So realize that, stabilize that. Then you will understand many things. Okay. You can slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Try to maintain whatever inner peace, inner calmness, inner awareness that you have developed. These are the meditative mind states that can help you to develop the understanding of meditation in the midst of life. So use it to live life, to cultivate the daily mindfulness, to stabilize the daily mindfulness, and to use it to develop heedfulness, to be hit, or you have to be ever mindful and constantly meditating, following Dhammapada verse 23. Okay, so we will continue from where we stopped. The Six Patriarchs Dhamma Jewel Platform Sutra has been explained in America before, but I do not know how well it has been done. Some lecturers simply read the text aloud, and since each sutra has its own special interpretation, merely reading it aloud does not reveal the meaning. Understanding this is important. The Buddha Dharma flourished in China, but only the teachings of the Six Patriarchs, the illiterate patriarch, were made into a sutra. It was recorded by the master's disciple, Fa Hai. Although his transcription may not mirror the patriarch's exact words, the meaning expressed are correct. I hope everyone will study the Buddha Dhamma with his true mind and not hold the opinion that it is very easy. So the key word is, which I have bold, is the true mind. Okay? Everyone will study the Buddha Dhamma with his true mind. Sensing your true mind. If you use your mundane mind, then you're wasting your time. It is only by regarding the Buddha Dharma as extremely important that we will be able to comprehend the principle which Xuanhua has explained. Here, study with your true mind is being emphasized. See, this is the key word. Huineng's advice is, don't study with your thinking mind, your mundane mind, or your conditioned arising mind, because that mind cannot understand or awaken. That's the reason why I always share with you all, thought-based meditation will bring you nowhere, cannot give you the real awakening, understanding. You must silence your mind, develop the meditative mind, the true mind, to insight into phenomena, to awaken. Otherwise, there is no way. So this one is very important. So here, study with your true mind is being emphasized. Huineng's advice is, don't study with your thinking mind, mundane mind, or conditioned arising mind, that that mind cannot awaken. So by now, I believe most Kayamitas, you will have known the difference between the two minds. Every living being, we have a mind. And most of the time, the mind you are using is the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the thought process. But there is another mind, which is the true mind, the silent mind. When thought cease, when there is no activity of sankhara, when the aggregates of mind, vedana, sanya, sankhara, vijnana, cease to be. Maybe vijnana without the content, the pure vijnana, yeah, that one can exist. But without the content of consciousness, that is your pure awareness. Then when you are just aware, before the knowing, before the perception, that is your true mind. Without thought, that is your true mind. So that understanding is very important. Okay, I will read on. Those who understand will advise as follows. I hope everyone will study the Dhamma with his true mind. Why are women left out? So this one, I think, is the English translation. Only his is used and her is not included. They should change the word to their true mind. He used the word everyone, so it can be changed to with their true mind. So as to include women as well. English is very precise, gender specific. When you say his, ladies are not involved. This is the foreword by Master Xuanhua. The note below states, Dharma Master Farhan was a room entering disciple of the sixth patriarch. This means the sixth patriarch had transmitted the wonderful mind seeing Dharma to him, and he has therefore privilege to enter the patriarch's room. So you can be a room entering disciple, means you have received the teaching. The wonderful mind seeing. You see, all of the transmission of sutra or transmission of the wisdom from patriarch to patriarch, they have to go through the mind seal, mind to mind seal. The meaning is both have that quality of mind. They are with the true mind and they can develop their understanding. So the mind to mind seal can only happen if the disciple has developed the silent mind, stabilized it, and can listen from there to awaken. Means you are ready to receive that profound teaching. So that's why that mind to mind seal, sometimes people cannot understand. Because it's from that nature to that nature. It's not through the thought process. You cannot pass on the truth, the teaching, the understanding using words. Because if they are not ready, the word may not have the meaning. It may not manifest the understanding. So mind to mind seal is very important. As I hear Xianhua mention, room entering disciple, which is Fahai, the meaning is very deep. That means the sixth patriarch has transmitted the wonderful mind seal to Fahai, Dhamma to Fahai, and he was therefore privileged to enter the patriarch's room. So this is for those who wants to understand. Fahai was actually the hand-picked successor of the sixth patriarch. So he will also become the seventh patriarch. After that, it must be along that line that finally reached Master Xuyin. Then Master Xuyin transmitted it to Master Xuanhua. We now move on to the introduction. Then we can go into the sutra proper, which is on page 3. This introduction is quite long because he need to introduce how all this come about. So be patient, bear with Master Xuanhua for giving you the introduction to the sixth patriarch platform sutra, because it involves many things. So I will read on a little bit more. The sixth patriarch's Dhamma jewel platform is the specific title of the sutra, and the word sutra is general, is a general term for all discourses given by the Buddha. In order to clarify their content, sutra titles are classified into 7 types, according to their reference to person, Dhamma, and analogy as follows. So this is Xianhua's way of explaining, and this is also the Mahayana tradition. First is the 3 singles. 3 of the 7 types of title refer to only one of the category of person, Dhamma, or analogy, and so they are called the 3 single. For example, the Buddha spoke the Amitabha Sutra. Amitabha Sutra is a title established solely by reference to person. Both the Buddha and Amitabha are person. For only a person can cultivate and realize Buddhahood. The Buddha is a person, and people are just Buddha. In Chinese, when we write the word Buddha for, The symbol for person is 人, stands on the left hand side. So that is a 人翅膀. The Mahaparinibbana Sutta is the title established by reference to the Dhamma, Nibbana. Nibbana is a Sanskrit word, which in Chinese or Mandarin is composed of two characters, Nibbana, which may be explained as non-produced and non-destroyed. 不生不灭. Then the Brahmane Sutra is the title established by reference to analogy. In the sutra, the Buddha explained the precepts. If you keep the precept, you will give forth light, like the great net in the heavens of the Brahma King. But if you carelessly break the precept, you commit the grave offense of knowing and yet deliberating violating Dhamma. Your light then flow into the three evil paths of the hell beings, the animal realm, and the hungry wolves, where there is not the slightest trace of merciful treatment. So you have to be careful as a cultivator. Do not break your precepts. B. The three doubles. Title established by reference to people or person and Dhamma. An analogy or Dhamma and analogy are called the three doubles. For example, the wonderful Dhamma Lotus Flower Sutra is the title established by reference to Dhamma and analogy, since the wonderful Dhamma is analogous to the lotus flower. The Lion Rose of the Tuscan Sutra is the title established by reference to person and analogy. Tuscan is the first of 10 honorific titles given to every Buddha, and therefore represent a person. The lion's roar is analogous to his speaking the Dhamma. The Sutra of the Question of Manjushri is a title established by reference to person, the Bodhisattva Manjushri of great wisdom, and the Dhamma he requested, Prajna. Complete in one. C. Complete in one. The 7 classification contain reference to person, Dhamma, and analogy. The great universal Buddha Flower Adornment Sutra, Avatamsaka Sutra, refer to the Buddha as a person, great and universal as a Dhamma, and the flower adornment as an analogy. The 6th patriarch Dhamma Jewel Platform Sutra is a Chinese, not an Indian sutra, and its title is not classified according to the 7 topics mentioned above. So this sutra is classified according to a person, Dhamma, and a place. The 6th patriarch is the person. Is a person, and the Dhamma Jewel is the Dhamma, and the platform is the place. I will now explain the specific title of this sutra. So here we start out with the 6th patriarch. Master Hui Ning of Nanhua Temple, who spoke the sutra at the beginning of the 8th century AD, was the 6th patriarch, 6th Chinese patriarch. He lived 6 generations after Bodhidharma, who brought the Mahayana teaching to China from India, and who became the first Chinese patriarch. Bodhidharma was also the 28th Indian patriarch, and so from the lineage of Sakyamuni Buddha, the great Master Hui Ning is counted as the 33rd generation patriarch. Then Dhamma. Dhamma is a method. It is like a rule, a model, or a pattern. If one cultivate according to this method, that is practicing Dhamma. Actually, the more accurate definition is Dhamma is the teaching, truth. Then jewel, the Dhamma is like a precious jewel. Then platform. The platform is the place where the sutra was spoken. This Dhamma seat may be raised above the ground by 3, 5, or 9 feet, but never more than 10 feet. In front of it sits a small table which holds suttas. Dhamma masters speak Dhamma, administer the three refuges, and transmit precepts from the Dhamma seat, which Dhamma protectors, good spirits, and numerous diamond treasury bodhisattvas take turns protecting. There are some notes on this page which says, one formally becomes a Buddhist only when one has received the three refuges. That's why my whole family take refuge. Yeah? Transmitted in a traditional ceremony by a qualified member of the Sangha. They are refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. The Dhamma is the teaching. The Sangha are the enlightened disciples of the Buddhas. So Buddhist monks and nuns of the past, present, and future, enlightened disciples of the Buddha. That's why Kui Sanbao, means taking refuge in the Triple Gem, is very important. If you don't take the refuge seriously, you are not a true Buddhist, a true cultivator of the Dhamma, because the Triple Gem, they are the gem of the entire universe. Only within the Triple Gem can you find the teaching. So for us, Theravada traditional practitioner, most of you would have taken your three refuges and renew your five precepts every time you attend the Buddhist ceremony or Buddhist cultivation or retreat or teachings. Like in our annual retreat, we always do that. Then in our classes, we do that, but we do it together. We recite together, we chant together. But in the retreat, we formally administer to you. They explain to you the meaning of precepts, refuges, and all those things. So that will help cultivators to develop the faith, the understanding, and the affinity with the Triple Gem. Because only within the Triple Gem can you find the teaching, which is the truth. The translation of the Sangha may not be that accurate. Here, they are referring to the Aryan Sangha, means to qualify as the Sangha of the Triple Gem, you must be an enlightened disciple of the Buddha, not any disciple that has taken refuge in the Buddhist tradition. So here we may take note that their definition of all Buddhist monks and nuns of the past, present, and future may not be that accurate. It's all of the Aryan Sangha of the Buddha. It can also be a lay person. The Sangha within the Triple Gem is the Aryan Sangha, the enlightened disciple of the Buddha. Why? The reason being, if you are not enlightened, you don't have the teaching, you don't have the Dhamma. That's why the Triple Gem must be an enlightened disciple of the Buddha, the Aryan Sangha. Bodhisattva is a Sanskrit word. Bodhi means enlightenment and Sattva means a being. They do not enter Nirvana, but choose instead to remain in the world and save living beings. Thus, Bodhisattvas are enlightened beings who enlighten other beings. Diamond treasury refer to a division of Dhamma protecting Bodhisattva. Some of these Dhamma protectors, they are also Bodhisattva like Wei Tao, Pusa. So the bracket got two Mandarin words, Wei Tao. One is a simplified Mandarin and the other one is the original traditional Mandarin. He is cultivating the Bodhisattva way. So don't think that they are only normal devas or Dhamma protector. They can also be Bodhisattvas. Okay, we turn to the next page. I think we stop here, huh? We will now open up for meditation reporting, followed by whatever question you may have.
Hello, Amitofo, Bradio, and Mrs. Steele, and all Kayamitas.
Yes.
Bradio, before that, right, can I ask a question?
Can you can ask.
It's about the taking the three refuge, the five precepts. So this one, I've heard many versions like you do not need to take it at a temple. You know, you can just take it in front of an altar, you know, yourself.
But it must be administered. Taking refuge is not like taking the bodhisattva vow or whatever in front of the Buddha image and all those things. You can do it. The refuge need to be administered. So normally for more stricter tradition, especially the Mahayana tradition, they actually even certain Theravada tradition, they want you to have a what they call when you go for ordination. Yeah? They want you to have a monk as a preceptor to administer the ordination. Then after that, of course, they will administer the three refuges and the monk's precepts and all those things. But for normal cultivator, all this refuge can be administered by the person who teach the Dhamma. That's why in the Sanbao Si, Triple Gem Temple in Cameron Highland, where we have our retreat, I will administer it for you all. Then you all will make the request. So our chanting book, the retreat version, has the format. And normally I ask Sister Ingby to lead because she is better at the Pali. So when she makes the request, then my nature there will administer the refuges and followed by the five or eight precepts. It depends on whether that retreat participant is taking the five precepts or the eight precepts. So we administer them accordingly. But the refuge is very important. Because when you take refuge, you actually develop the faith and the understanding to really commit yourself to be a true cultivator of the way. Because according to Sakyamuni Buddha, in the Dhammapada, I forgot which verse already. The only refuge saved is the Triple Gem. You cannot find the teaching apart from the Triple Gem. That's why taking refuge with the Triple Gem is the most important. Because within the Triple Gem, only you can find the teachings. Of course, the first of the Triple Gem is Sakyamuni Buddha. If he is a Sammasambuddha, he definitely has the teaching. That's why the first gem is the Buddha. Then the second triple gem, second of the triple gem is the Dhamma. The Dhamma is the teaching itself. So if you take refuge with the Dhamma, you will definitely receive the authentic teaching. That's why it's Fo Fa Sen. Sen is a Senren. So there is also this what they call the Sangha, the third of the Triple Gem. So this Sangha, if it's not the Aryan Sangha, they are not enlightened beings. They are not noble ones. So Sangha has two meanings. If it's referring to the Triple Gem, it must be Aryan Sangha. If it's referring to the community of monks and nuns and bhikkhuni or practitioner or Dhamma, then it is the normal Sangha, not the Aryan Sangha. Yeah. So taking refuge, if you really truly understand, it has to be the Aryan Sangha. Otherwise, you cannot find the Dhamma. Yeah. But the other type of understanding is, even if it's the normal Sangha, you can also find the truth, the teaching. Where within the normal Sangha, there are Aryan Sangha. But it depends. Not always the case. Because as the Dhamma is being passed down over the ages or over the years, there is a rise and fall of the sasana, or we call it the dispensation of Sakyamuni Buddha. So this sasana is supposed to last for 5,000 years, and because of the Bhikkhuni order, it may only last 4,500 years. So over these 4,500 years, the Dhamma that is being transmitted can rise and fall, unless you can meet the true patriarch, the Dhamma practitioner or Dhamma master that has the teaching. You may not find the true teachings. So to really be more safe, you need to take refuge in the Aryan Sangha. Then after understanding the importance of taking refuge in this tree, then I will explain why refuge. When we take refuge means we have that faith, the understanding, and we are determined to really take refuge. What is refuge? The English word is when you have something that you want protection, you go to that thing for protection. So the triple gem has the teaching. That's why it can protect you. When you cultivate and study the teaching and develop the understanding, it can awaken your mind, liberate your mind, and set you free. That's why it's a refuge, safe, sure refuge. The other more important deep meaning is you create strong affinity with the triple gem. It's because you have taken refuge. That's why every time we chant three times. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami. Means to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, we go for refuge. Then dutiyampi, for the second time, we go to the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. We commit ourselves very strong from the understanding and our nature, our heart, our faith. Then for the third time, patiyampi, buddhang saranang gacchami, dhammang saranang gacchami, and sanghang saranang. So this will strengthen the affinity with triple gem. What does it mean? It means whenever your form and mind arise, wherever there is the triple gem, because you have taken affinity, it will link you, it will connect you, then it will allow you to receive the teachings. So refuge is very important if you understand and you have done it with the understanding and the faith. Then it will bring forth the causes and conditions for you to receive. That's why this is why my nature received the triple gem very fast. Now, of course, I was lucky in the sense that I started early. Then the book came. Then that time, it was just the teaching. I haven't received the true Dhamma, the true understanding, until 1986, when the message came from Kuan Yin, the triple gem. She poured from her vase into my hand. Just I was at the Three Refuges today, explaining the significance, the importance, and how it can create affinity and condition for you to connect. So whenever you arise after you have taken refuge, wherever there is this triple gem, you will find your way there, and you will connect, and you will know how to receive all this. It's just like this life. When I look back, initially I just received the normal teachings from the Buddhist community and all those things. the book and all those things. Of course, I went to Brickfield Temple. All this is because of my past. Then suddenly, when I supposed to move, Kuan Yin's nature came with a message. And with a triple gem from the vase that she hold, she pour onto my head 3 jewel in a straight line. Then he told me, you have to move fast, not much time left. That's why from that moment, I move. Then the teacher come, the guide come, the book come, everything come. That's why I met Master Chen Hua. I took the refuge. Then after that, I move. Then my cultivation was like continuous, non-stop. That time I was still working at the prime of my career. So that 3 years, 32 years old until 35, I was cultivating non-stop. Daily mindfulness, daily religious routine, listening to Dhamma, everything, non-stop. I just continuously, my whole life, almost entirely, 100%. Although I work, I have a family, but I am cultivating throughout the day. Initially, of course, the waking moment. Then later on, when I connect and I understand the whole thing, even when I rest or sleep, I am still in the meditative state. So this understanding is very important. That's how I came to know the meaning and significance of the three refuges. Then also the importance of renewing our precepts, where we undertake the training rule to abstain from evil by keeping the precepts. And precepts are most important in the cultivation. Their precepts brings about avoidance of evil, cultivation of virtue, which is the first two advice of all Sammasambuddha. So precepts, refuge, are very important. From there, when we take refuge, we renew our precept, we set ourselves on the Dhamma way, in the right path, with all the faith, everything. Then only we can be successful in our cultivation. So these are the very important understanding. So salute to you, Pochenga, for asking this question. So hopefully this will help more Kayanamita to have the understanding. Okay? Yeah.
Good afternoon, Brother Teo.
Afternoon, yes.
Hello, Mrs. Teo, and all the Kayanamitas.
Yeah.
For my cultivation, I still keep on following the Dharma and be aware.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So have you developed a proper daily religious routine to anchor your cultivation?
Yes.
That one is very useful. Then constantly listening to the Dhamma, contemplate, reflect whenever you feel that you can do it. So all these are the cultivation. Then attending Dhamma class, all these things, they can bring forth the faith, the causes and conditions for understanding to unfold. They, not knowingly, unknowingly, you all may also develop the 10 meritorious action. Then your merits, your virtue, your parami, they are all being slowly, slowly developed. So all this will pave the way for you to progress along the path of Dhamma. Yeah. But do you have any question or meditation experience to report? That one more important. You can report your meditation and ask questions. It will help not only for you personally, but also others. Because when they hear, they learn, they develop the ability to learn from what you experience. The sharing.
I'm more on my daily awareness, and more observant around. You know, like this. I keep on checking on my attitude towards nature.
Okay. So, how do you actually do that? You don't mind explain a bit, huh? elaborate a little bit. Means throughout the day when you wake up, what do you do? Then after that, how you go about doing your other things. So how you integrate that understanding of what you say into your life means you try to be aware and develop the mindfulness and all those things. You have to describe it, then I can advise you and let you have better understanding so that you can progress.
When I wake up, yes, you know, every movement and every thought, I try to be aware of my thought, checking on the wholesomeness of the thought.
Okay.
Check on the wholesomeness of the thought, and also try my very best to to make my mind very wholesome.
So that's what you do. What else?
When I feel sad or whatever, I feel that I understand that it's the wrong thought.
Then what do you do? That's very good.
I remember your teaching on the opposite, you know.
Yeah, the five ways. The five ways to overcome unwholesome thought.
Of the unwholesome thought. I counteract it and have realized
the time of the direct opposite wholesome thought. So that one, does it help you?
Yes, it helps me a lot.
Good. Then did you go on to the second, third, and fourth way?
Yes.
If you go on, then it will help you. That is, the third way is meditation. Second way is to reflect on the danger of holding on to that wrong thought, the consequence of holding on to that wrong thought. So these first two are still thought-based. Then third way is meditative. You need to silence your mind to be aware of that unwholesome thought, whether it's a selfish thought or emotional, angry thought or a fearful thought. You stay with it. Then you see what happens. Then the thought will subside because you don't give it any more negative energy or wrong thought. Then the awareness itself is a purifying force. It will make you peaceful. It will make you calm. So you should try that one. Then later on, from that ability to be peaceful and aware through the third way, which is meditative way, awareness way, you will be able to trace the origination factor, how the unwholesome thought come about. Then how you can straighten your view to retrospectively reverse it. So that third and fourth way is a better way to develop the cultivation. Otherwise, what you are doing is a good start. But I realize you use the Dhamma knowledge to actually try to improve your character, improve the way you go about living your life, which is a good start, let I say. But this is still reasoning. This is still what we call analysis, following the Dhamma knowledge. So this one can help a bit, but it's not transforming, not penetrating, not very effective. So just now when you describe that little bit which you have described, now you listen, I will advise you.
Thank you, Matthew.
The moment you wake up, become conscious, first is to aware of what? Your bodily posture.
Yes. Yes.
Don't be too eager to watch your thought.
Yes.
Because that one, you are trying to look for wholesome thought or unwholesome thought. So that one is the mundane mind or the thought process still active doing that. But at least now you have improved because this is a good start, I say. You start to observe this through the thought and not through the awareness yet, not through the actual mindfulness yet. Because you, through the understanding of Dhamma with the knowledge, the thought wants to purify, wants to avoid all the negative thought. Then want to use the five ways or the first way to overcome unwholesome thought. So you are trying to like cultivate the four right effort, the first right effort, but using the five way which you have started to develop but not good yet. So it's okay because it's a good start, like I say. So what happened is when you wake up, first thing is to be aware of your posture.
Yes,
and from your posture, you silent. Don't try to know. Don't arise a thought yet. Then find out what you want to do. The mind will be conditioned to do things. Find out. The first thing that actually stir you is the bladder. Your bladder want to go to the toilet. They are normally after a night sleep or a few hours of sleep. The bladder has this urgency to go to the washroom to relieve itself. So that bladder tactile will actually condition you to move. But most people, they are not aware at all how they arise from the bed, how they move and walk and go into the washroom and do their whatever thing inside there. They are totally unaware, lost in thought, in a hurry. But if you cultivate daily mindfulness, what you must do is first instant aware of your posture.
Yes.
Then develop the silent mind to find out what is the next thing that you are conditioned into reacting or doing. Yeah. The thought will arise, whatever, but find out what is the one that condition you to arise from the bed and move. But suddenly you recall, oh, you have somebody coming to see you, or as a mother, you have to prepare breakfast or what. And then that thought condition you to wake up. But most important is whatever that condition you to move, to act, even the tactile bladder call or what, you tell yourself, now you decide how to wake up, how to move, how you actually arise from the bed. You have a blanket. Excuse me. You have a blanket or a comforter. Then how your hand moves to remove the comforter. Then how you make effort to arise. All the movement, all of the activity, your body and mind must move as one. No thought at all. Just try that.
Yes.
Then
yes.
How you actually come out of the bed, your movement, all action, all movement in the present moment. Then don't try to know. Just aware. Then how you on the sitting posture, how you stand up. That's why the four postures, standing away, sitting away, walking away. How you walk to your toilet, washroom. Then how your hand move to open the door. Everything with awareness. Then the blinking of the eye, the turning of the hand, the whatever movement. All activity, you try to develop awareness. If you do this for a while, maybe 3 months or 6 months, then it becomes part of you. Then you become like very natural, aware. That is the beginning of daily mindfulness. That is the beginning of awareness. Then even when you reach the washroom, don't be in a hurry to answer nature's call. Because if you are mindful and aware, you can take your time on. Then when you take your time, all your action, all your movement, how you do all those things, no need to describe. Then how you actually answer nature's call and relieve yourself. Everything is with awareness. Everything that happens within your form and mind, the awareness is there. That's why you start to focus within. The awareness of all the movement activity within and the thought process. It's no longer about loss in thought, outside memory, recalling and all that. This is the daily mindfulness that reverses your cultivation from external thinking, recollection, memory, you go into internal awareness of internal movement, activity, or action or move. So when you are aware, you cannot think. That's how you become more and more mindful, more and more aware. So try that. Try that. It will help you. Then from there, you extend it out into your daily life. Then the other thing that you must develop as a good practice on the daily religious routine is the moment you wake up after you go to the washroom, pay respect to Triple Gem before you start the day. Then you already have a daily religious routine to meditate after you wake up. So whatever, some prefer to wash up first, answer nature's call, then only meditate. Okay, no problem. Some immediately they wake up, like last night what I did is, I pay respect to Triple Gem first in the bedroom. No need to be at the altar.
Mm-hmm.
After I pay respect, if I need to answer nature's call, I answer. Then after that, I meditate. I will sit silent, meditate, away. Then I will transfer merit, share merit, and end the meditation after that. But initially, I will chant the salutation to the Sama Sambuddha, means Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa. Then I will renew my, sorry, take my refuge, then renew my precepts. Then after that, I will read it metta if I need to. But later on, because my cultivation stabilized, so metta I only do on the initial period. After that, my metta already part of me, so I don't really need to do. But when I was doing the metta, I was very stable, very strong, my metta very strong. That one, even in the university, before I go into the full-time cultivation, I already have very strong metta and anapanasati. So all this, you can do. And mindfully come out of it. If your mind enters sati, you will know that all your movement, bowing, activity, how you come up, all the activity and movement, even the blinking of your eye, your breathing, your action, your movement, everything, all of the fine movement of your bodily activity, how it actually moves, like the walking, every very small movement, like your hand activity, or everything is like slow motion, means that mindfulness and the awareness is there. Not until you reach that stability, you cannot see your thought technically.
Yes.
So what happened is you all use thought-based type of right effort to purify your thought or unwholesome thought, to try to recognize, then do something to change that thought. That one is a thought watching another thought. So after that thought has arisen, but you are not at the moment to be aware of it. But when you are at the moment to be aware of it, it's a different thing.
Yes.
But that selfish thought or unhappy thought or emotional thought arises already, then another thought recognizes it. Means you are not aware. It's another thought recognizes that thought. So that is actually thought-based, not really mindfulness. But initially, it's a good start. It's a good beginning. Now, at least you try to be aware in your own way, in your own understanding, because the stability of mindfulness not there, you cannot develop the awareness one. So what you do is normal as a good start. But you must now move beyond that to stabilize your daily mindfulness. That's why when you do your bowing, don't worry. Bow until the body and mind move as one. Then when your mind enters a sati, you will know. Suddenly you realize, all of your movement, like body and mind, is already one. No need to do anything. No need to practice mindfulness or awareness. The sati is there naturally because you have been doing it. You have been developing the form of meditation until the anapanasati become very subtle. then the mind enters sati, then everything you do is in sati. That's why the formal meditation need to be done until the mind is required, very still. It's just like our four support, relax, maintain awareness. That one is, of course, faster and better if you understand. Otherwise, you use mindfulness method or a method and a technique to anchor the mind and develop the mindfulness of it until it becomes very subtle, very still, until mind enters the deep. So I also sent out one email today. I hope you receive it. Otherwise, you can check it.
Then, yes.
The my Kayamita Google group on Maha Mind Enters Sati. I think the transcript by Sister Sandra Chan, Brother Chia's wife. Then Ingbi helped me to edit the first round. Then I completed it. So that one you read through. That one you will understand mindfulness at a different level. The silent mind, how mind enters sati and transform you. You should read through that one. That one will help you. All the short video, wherever interesting, you go to the website. Well, there are a lot now. You listen to it, especially those on daily mindfulness, a lot.
Yes.
So hopefully with this, you will progress and you will become different, Karen.
Yes, thank you so much, Brother Teo. Yes.
Yeah, sadhu.
So much, sadhu.
Yeah. So anything else you want to know or you want to report or ask?
But I find that my mind is also very positive, you know. I feel a lot
definitely,
of things can...
Definitely, because...
be angry or I understand
Because
what's happening.
Because you have the faith, then you have that joy. But you are not moving to the next level of actual mindfulness training. That's why for you, you already know you have improved. Because this is like using the knowledge to cultivate. Initially, it's a good start.
Yes.
Using knowledge to cultivate means you don't want to be angry. You don't want to be emotional. You don't want to have fear. You don't want to have selfishness. But all this is according to your thought process now, according to your Dhamma knowledge now. This is not the real transformation yet. The real transformation is when the sati come in, when the mindfulness awareness come in. Then you can see the subtle greed, the actual mental intent behind everything you do or manifest, how you are conditioned into that mind state. The habitual tendency, how you function as a human, you start to see all this. But without mindfulness, you cannot see. It's just Dhamma knowledge.
Yes,
so there is a limit to what you can do. So that one is not effective, not penetrative. But that one is now more Dhamma knowledge based, where you analyze, you try to do the reasoning and all those things. So as a start, it's good.
Yes.
It's already a good start. But to really progress, you need to go into the refinement of the cultivation. That's why just now I mentioned all this is to help you to move into that. And other Kayamita can also listen and develop it. Even for Tammy, he still needs to develop it. Then there was one reporting by Tammy, which was very good, where I explained the daily mindfulness thing. It's in the short video also. I said the one inside there asking the question is your daughter, Sister Tammy. So that one was very good. Well, that one, after somebody whom we don't know from outside, after he listened, he realized the mindfulness that I taught is so different. I can describe it with such clarity and detail that he knew even monk also cannot do. Maybe you give me a minute, I try to get it, then I share with you. You see, this particular, I think must be a guy, Tam Kok Hee. I don't know who is he. He, after he listened to that short video on mindfulness, he commented this. Sadhu, he said, for the beautiful teaching on sati, mindfulness. He said, Achan Sumedho seems to teach this kind of awareness too, but he doesn't teach in a very detailed way like you, and how to realize this sati. And he put there sadhu. That's why I don't know who he is, but this guy is good. So if he can understand up to this level, means he has fairly good understanding. So because of that, I think it's from the short video, does my enter sati means this is Qin Hao. Yeah, under Qin Hao. Then I replied to this particular brother Tom. So my reply, I said, sadhu to you, Koki. Sadhu to you for your ability to understand and appreciate such dhamma. Then I share with him on the, there's an Indian guy who asked me another question. I said, below question from another video may also help you understand better. So this particular cultivator is an Indian. I think I shared before, you all go back and read it again. He said, sir, quick question. From my own practice, this is what I can tell. Awareness includes only the following possibilities. Either your mind sinks into an object, that is to say, if one is aware of a particular mental or physical object for more than 1 second, then that is to say it is focusing on it, or the mind is lost in thought, like moha, become unaware, or lost in its perception. That is to say, it does not know what it is doing. Then the third possibility is, it seems natural from the point of view of ignorance of a puttacana, that it either the mind goes out darting towards sight, sound, smell quickly, or insight to the thought process and physical sensation. So this guy is quite good because he is a meditator for very long, and he read a lot, he also cultivate a lot, then he also know how to silence his mind, but not stable. That's why he can understand up to certain stage. Then his question is very good. My question is simple, he said, sir, if one knows something, it is still a thought, which is very good. If I know right, know something happened, it is still a thought. And may it be verbal, but knowing is a thought. If I call a table is already delusion. Cognition itself is a thought. One cannot cognize form without description. It is subtle. Calling the color red, red is a thought. How do I know it's red? From memory. So even if thought can stop, he said, because I always tell him silent mind, how can memory stop? See, his question is very good. He said, how can memory stop? The memory is part of our form and mind. Then I answer him. I said, memory is still part of sankhara, an aggregate of mind. And since thought is respond to memory, so memory is still a part of thought, forming its content. So you must understand the content of thought is your views, opinion, and conditioning from your memory. Whereas sati is awareness before the knowing. So it's not a thought, because there is no perception to name or label it as yet. You need to understand what is specific phenomenal awareness, means awareness and the phenomena move as one, and spacious awareness without a center to understand what pure awareness is. Without thought activity or sankhara, find out who are you and what are you. Just silence everything, silence your mind to realize your true mind, then you will understand better. Hope this helps. So all these are from the short video, and now I realize Qin Hao is sending to me because he received more and more people who know how to listen and ask the correct, appropriate question, which is a good sign. Well, early on, I don't think people understand what I share. But now, surprisingly, there are more and more people who can suddenly like appreciate and willing to come in and ask questions. Hmm. So go back and read through all this. Then listen to our YouTube, you know, the short video. It will help you a lot.
Yes.
Okay, Karen.
Thank you so much, Brother Teo, for your pointing. Thank you so much, Brother Teo.
Yeah, it helped not only you, a lot of people, even your doctor, they all. So,
sadhu
to you for your good condition. So let us rejoice. Sadhu. Sadhu. Sadhu.
Wow.
Sadhu.